Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching another episode of The Naturalist Capitalist. Before we start talking, I just wanted to say my friend Will Bell donated me some of his Rabbit Eye Blueberry Wine. I highly recommend it to anybody. Just go look him up, Rabbit Eye Wine, on Google. You'll find him, or DuckDuckGo or whatever, if you don't want to support the New World Order. But anyway, I've got my friend Tommy Sammons back on the show on the other end. How you doing tonight, Tommy?
What's going on, dude? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I can't complain. I've actually been super busy. I don't know about you, but I was actually supposed to have 2 days off in a row this last weekend, and that was a luxury I did not receive. I had to work yesterday. But are you still right out straight, or what's it like down in Texas?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, I'm pulling probably, you know, I'm working by the hour now, so it's different than being over the road, obviously. And I'm pulling anywhere between 50 and 57 hours every week, which is nice. I'm good with that. You know, my wife pays most of the bills. I pay one bill with the money I make. So my wife pays most of the bills. And so all my money goes to whatever extra stuff we need to do. So it works out pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing signs everywhere, like help wanted, help needed, you know, need drivers, need this, need that. And we've tried to hire a few drivers. Like, I've been where I am for about a year and a half now. And I think he's tried to hire three people in the span that I've been here, but he's had to fire every single person so far. But are you guys having lots of truck driver shortages around you too, or what's it like down there?
Well, yeah, down here, there's always room for more truck drivers. Always has been. Ever since I started driving a truck, I know that from the very get-go, when I started driving, I could put out a resume, and within 24 hours, I'm getting just bombarded with emails, and it's like driver's choice. You choose where you want to go. But, you know, Gord talks about it a lot, that a lot of that is the subsidies. You know, the government subsidizes these trucking companies to put new people through school and educate them, and brings all these new truckers in, keeps the wages artificially low, and older truck drivers that have been driving for a long time, it's like, I make more money now working locally than I did when I was over the road. Like, all right, like, why the hell am I going to go back and spend 96% of my time over the road, miss everything, my children's entire, you know, childhood? It doesn't even make any sense anymore. It's gotten to the point where it's an absurdity to be gone for someone like me.
Yeah. So I think you were the guy who actually put me down this rabbit trail, but the truck driver shortage that we've been sold exists for the last decade or more actually has been exaggerated, but now it's gotten to the point where it is as bad as they're saying it is, but yep, No one cares. So how did that happen? You also kind of put me onto the fact that a lot of these big companies, they get really underqualified people through the loops that, you know, independent operators can't get through, and they get people who aren't even really properly trained or licensed on the road behind the wheel. How does all that happen? How do they do that? And, you know, what's going on there?
Well, it's the massive corporations in bed with government, and they're able to, you know, pull their resources from government and get these, you know, it's similar to the way they do their tax, you know, the tax structure is set up. They have all these benefits and all these, you know, little loopholes, and the turnover rate is extraordinary. It's amazing. If you go sit on the yard at like a big monster conglomerate corporation for just a couple of days, getting your truck worked on, there's every week they're doing classes of 15 new drivers, you know, and they're bringing in drivers every week. And this is, you're talking about like companies like Schneider or Crete or these companies that have yards all over the place. There, you're talking 20, 30 different locations, terminals where drivers can go. And it's happening at every fucking terminal where there are like 15 drivers at every terminal, 15 new hires every week. And you're like, this is insane. It's just, it's a revolving door at this point. There's no company loyalty and there's no security. And they bring in these guys that, I mean, now they're even putting on your license now. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's one of the people I work with is brand new to driving, just started driving, and has on the license that they can't drive a standard. They can't drive a manual transmission. Yeah. You know, they have to drive an automatic. And it's like, and now all the companies are just getting rid of manuals because, you know, then you actually have to have some knowledge of how to operate a motor vehicle at that point. So right. They're just, no, at this point, everybody's just a steering wheel holder. And, you know, they kind of spoke this shortage into existence. They complained and complained and complained and complained. And the entire time, the income of drivers was dropping or stagnating. And therefore, with inflation, might as well be dropping. And drivers, like I said, like you get into this industry and you do it for, I've been driving for 20 years. I think Gord's been driving for 25 years, something like that. He's driven on 3 continents. The guy like just has all sorts of knowledge and stories, and he's really interesting to talk to about this stuff. But like, when you got people like us that are like, yeah, I don't know if I'll ever do it again. You know, I enjoyed it. There are things about it I enjoyed, but is it worth my time? Is it worth all the sacrifices I made? You know, I mean, I started driving a truck for Halliburton, making like, I don't know, $48,000 to $50,000 a year right out the gate. And I don't think I ever got beyond 60, 61,000 in a year. It was always like this range, this like $10,000 range. It was every year. And it was just kind of like, okay, like, why am I even doing this? Now, I never ended up with an independent firm like what you work for, what Quincy works for, which a lot of times you make more money doing that. But the thing is, there's a lot of competition in that too, because all your drivers that are experienced that drive 15, 20 years want to either get in with a firm like that or just want to go local, go into the logistics side of it, you know, and not have to deal with the driving anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the sad part of it to me is the culture and the art of driving is disappearing. And, you know, the manuals going away is just one part of that. Like, it's really hard to find a truck stop with a diner anymore. You know, the CB chatter has dropped off. You know, the trucks don't look cool anymore. Like, I mean, if I could get dropped back in like 30 years ago, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff I wouldn't like that was going on back then too. But there was more of an art to what you were doing. People actually took pride in it. It was a lifestyle, where now you're just, you know, driving huge chunks of plastic down the road as fast as you can. And, you know, eating gas station hot dogs. If you're lucky, there might be a Denny's that you can grab something disgusting to eat. Yeah. It's just like with everything else, the soul of our work is kind of evaporating. It's just about the materialistic part of it at this point, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, there were very few places I really looked forward to going, for the truck stops. And, one of them was where it was in, Wisconsin. And there was a truck stop there. I want to say it was a Petro, but they had an independent diner inside of it, and they had great food. And their showers were just immaculate. You had a damn TV in the mirror. Like, it was just this like really cool place that, you know, you would spend $16 for a shower, you know, it's like being in a 5-star hotel, you know, like kind of deal. Yeah. And so it was like really cool, but that's rare. You know, the Petros and the TAs, they're, you know, what country, whatever they call the country kitchen, whatever it's called. That was probably some of the best food you get anymore. and it's not even that great. You know, the buffet was like, eh, whatever. So, but you know, the experience of driving, of being gone and driving, and some of the stories, especially when you're driving, you know, a manual, and you're learning a lot of this stuff as you go. You're like, yeah, I've been driving for 10 years. And then, you know, like with me, the first time I ever went out in the mountains was I'd been driving for 10 years. And mm-hmm. I mean, I thought I was going to die. I was like, I was like, 8% grade next 14 miles. How bad can that be? And then, you know, after I peeled my fucking seat out of my ass, I was like, okay, that was a fucking sucks, you know, 2 o'clock in the fucking morning, like flying down, brakes on fire. You're like, oh my God, you know, I'm going to die, you know? So,
yeah.
So yeah, you learned those hard lessons, and it was an experience, and they just kind of taken away a lot of the experience.
It's funny. You know, when I'm like 200,000 pounds gross weight going up a hill at like 4 miles per hour or whatever, I have a line of cars behind me and they all think, oh, as soon as he crests the hill, he's gonna, you know, go normal speed down the other side. But that's not exactly how it works. It's just holding them back at the 4 miles per hour all the way down. I'm actually going on Austin Peterson's show tomorrow. He asked me to come on, and here's an interesting article he sent me that I read. And it's the supply chain stalled by 72,000 truckers who failed strict drug tests. I don't know if you know anything about this. I didn't know anything about this till he sent it to me. But it's a new style of testing from the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. It's a 22-month-old registry. So I guess I didn't have a ton of time to read it, but I think it holds your record for the previous 22 months. And if you have any infractions, you can't get a job anywhere. So if you fail the drug test, I guess it used to be easier to go to another company and get a job, but they're making that a lot harder. And that's resulted in 72,000 people being laid off in just since January 2020. And I guess 60% of these layoffs are from marijuana use. And I'd imagine most of those people probably weren't impaired when they were tested. It's just because marijuana stays in your system for so long. Mm. So, you know, I'm an anarchist, but I can understand why they would drug test for truck driving. Like, I don't think it's a ridiculous law. But when it comes to marijuana use, they really need to come up with some way to test whether you're actually high versus if you've used marijuana in the last month, because that's ridiculous, man. I mean, and everybody's using marijuana now. It's not the 1980s anymore. You know, like everybody uses it. A lot of truck drivers use it probably. And I don't know, like, I don't see why that should be illegal to use it. I can understand why you don't want people impaired, but they really need to come up with some sort of test that you can tell when people are impaired on the job. I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I know. I remember when they had to sign up for the registry. It was just a couple of months ago, but I didn't know what it was for. Work approached me. It was like, hey, you got to do this. And I was like, okay, like whatever. But I didn't really, I knew it had something to do with drugs and alcohol, because it says that's what it's for, but I didn't know how they were utilizing it. And yeah, man, I think these things should be up to the employer. If they want to test for these things, that's fine. It should be up to them, or even communities. If they want to test for them, okay, that's fine. Like,
or your insurance company or something.
Yeah, something like that. I think having the government play this role, this parental role that they play, has created a lot of the issues that we see today. That's a lot of the problem, is the way people look at government as the benevolent, as the sovereign, as you know, the power behind everything. And I think that's created a lot of issues unnecessarily. As far as marijuana goes, I thought they had some sort of testing that they do when in these states like Colorado that have legalized marijuana, where they are able to test you if you had been using at that point in time, if you were high, maybe I'm wrong on that. I haven't looked.
There could be. I don't really know.
So. I haven't looked seriously into it. But yeah, if just because you have traces of THC in your system from a week ago or 2 weeks ago, because when you were on days off, you went out with your wife and you fucking took a couple of hits off a joint, you know, like, all right, like whatever. I think it's insanity. It's insane that, you know, marijuana is considered a Schedule I narcotic to begin with, you know? Yes. So there's that. And then, I mean, you can just take it from there at how absurd the entire situation and argument is around the marijuana usage.
Yeah. People might not believe this, but it's not something I would lie about because I really don't care. I have never smoked marijuana in my life. And I know I look high on pretty much every podcast I do. That's just because I'm tired. But I've literally never, because when I was in high school, I was a square. But then by the time I wasn't a square anymore, I was a truck driver. So I just, never, and I did take long periods of time off. Like I took like 2 years off to travel the country. There were a lot of times where, you know, marijuana use would have made sense, but I just never took it because I still had my CDL, my medical card and everything. And even if you get T-boned in an accident, even if it's not your fault, I think they can still drug test you on site. Is that correct? Like if just if you're involved?
I have no idea. I mean, drug testing on site, that's, you know, I mean, you can refuse the test and then they have to get a warrant and yada, yada, yada. You can go through that situation if you want, if you feel like it. But I mean, I don't know. If you're in a personal vehicle, they may be able to test you and, you know, or try to hold that against you in some way. And, you know, yeah. And then what happens? They try to suspend your license for the next 5 or 7 years. And then what are you doing? Then you're working odd jobs, just trying to get past those five to seven years so you can get back in a truck and make some money, you know?
Yeah.
Cause that's the problem with trucking is I found this out very quickly because I never wanted to be a truck driver. It was never something I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So, but once I started doing it and I tried to leave, I realized very quickly, I couldn't make as much money starting off in any other industry than I made starting off in truck driving. So they kind of trap you. It's kind of this trap that you get stuck in and you're like, all right, well, I guess this is what I do now because, you know, I have child support on 5 kids and, you know, whatever, all these responsibilities I got to take care of. And it's dependent on me making this income. How am I going to, I have to figure out a way to replace this income before I can get out of this industry. And the industry eats up so much of your time, so much of your life that if you want any sort of, you know, relationship with people in your life, then you have no choice but to put off doing anything. As much as you want to do something else, you have to put it off until you get reach a point to where you can, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we hear a lot of people in the libertarian circles talking about time preference nowadays. It seems to be like the newest thing everyone's brought up. And being a truck driver, low time preference is just part of it's part of existing. I mean, whether you're going down a hill and you don't want to lose your brakes, or you're in traffic and you're staying, you know, a good distance behind the guy in front of you, or, you know, you're driving across the country, or you're not smoking weed because you're afraid you'll show up with a positive drug test. Like, I mean, it is like the definition of a low time preference job. Like you can't be someone who's hasty, doesn't want to take your time and do things the right way, or doesn't care about consequences, especially with speeding. Like my younger brother, we used to work at the same place back in New Hampshire doing line work. And we both had CDLs for what we were doing there. But he got 3 speeding tickets right next to each other. And he lost his license for 3 months because he was 18. He was under 21. Mm. And then he got his license back. And then he instantly got 2 more speeding tickets and he lost his license, I think, for 6 months. And It was just like, buddy, you can't do this. Like, if this is the type of work you want to do, you know, your decisions have consequences in real life. But yeah. I just think it's funny when you hear a lot of people who don't have jobs like we do talking about this type of stuff. And it's like, no, we do get it. Like, it's kind of necessary to survive with this type of job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I find that my time preference is much lower if I'm getting paid.
Like, right. That's funny how that works, isn't it?
So, yeah, people are like, how do you not have road rage? It's kind of, I'm getting paid. I'm like, whatever. I don't fucking care. Take your time. I don't give a shit. I'll get there when I get there. So,
but. Yeah, it's that way. Like, when I'm driving and I'm not working, like, because what I do for work is driving now. Like, I'm always in a hurry when I'm in my personal vehicle. It's just like, it feels like wasted time that I could be doing something other than driving, where I don't dislike driving, but it's all I do for work. So if I'm not working, I'd prefer to be walking or being in, you know, stationary or a passenger. At least it's kind of funny, like how you're, you know, like when I wasn't working, when I was just traveling the country, I didn't give a shit about how much time I spent behind the wheel at all. I was just like, yeah, whatever, cool, you know, take it as it comes. But once you're actually working and that's what you do for work, like, being behind the wheel is the last thing I want to do now, you know?
Yeah, I found like it, and it used to, this was part of the issue I had with my second wife was I didn't want to, I never, when I, once I got home, I didn't want to leave. It was like, I don't, she's like, go to the grocery store with me. I'm like, no, no, I'm not going anywhere. I've been driving for 500 miles today. You go to the grocery store. I'll be right here. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. And it, you know, that was that became like my habit, is I would just sit at home. Like, when I got home, it was, that's all I did. I didn't want to go anywhere. And it wasn't until this year, actually, that I started getting involved in like libertarian activities outside of home, you know, other than podcasting. And I went to Childeberg, and then I went to RU Weekend, if you count that as libertarian, which a lot of people there were libertarians, a lot of names you would recognize were there. And so it, but it's really hard to, for, it was really hard for me to motivate myself to get up and get out the damn door if I wasn't working. Yeah, it was just like, I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to be home. And I'm gone all the time. I just want to be at home, you know? And so that was always a thing that caused a lot of friction in my life. It's because I was like, people were like, oh, you want to go out and do something? No, but you can come over here if you want, because I mean, I'm not going anywhere, you know? But I've noticed since I'm home every night, I'm not near as ornery about it, you know. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, I try like on a day off, you know, I'll have a week day off or something like that, work in retail, I'll try to take my wife out to lunch every once in a while or something like that, and get out of the house, get her out of the house, you know. So because she works from home, so she would be entirely sick of just sitting at the house. I mean, she doesn't mind it now, I guess, because I'm home every night, so she never even gets dressed half the time. She's just sitting around here in her underwear working.
Yeah. Yeah. It's any bachelors who watch my show, you'll be able to connect with me on this. You know, luxury and comfort are just such backseat priorities to me at this point in life. But I realized, like, come on, Reed, you're like almost 30. You know, so it's not going to hurt to, you know, you have plenty of money, so you can actually like buy some basic necessities that most people live with and not feel like you're being luxurious. But like, when I left New Hampshire in March of 2020, I had a mattress in the back of my pickup truck. It was just like this 6-inch foam mattress that fit perfectly into the bed. And I built a platform and I slept on it. And that's what I had, traveled the country with in 2015, 2016. And I just sleep in the back, so I didn't have to go hotels or whatever. And I had this cover you could zip off and throw in the washer, so, you know, it wouldn't get disgusting or whatever. And then I moved into a house in Utah last summer. And so I just took that mattress out and I threw it on the floor. And then I just, you know, kept washing the cover or whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll get a bed eventually. I did that for, I just bought a bed last weekend. That's the first time in almost 2 years, but I just like sleep on that 6-inch foam mattress on the floor. And when I'd come home at night, if I was in the truck, because the truck had like a legit mattress in it, the sleeper cab or whatever. If I came home at like 7 o'clock at night, it was like, okay, it's 20 minutes to my house. So I can drive 20 minutes and sleep on this foam mattress and then wake up and come in and start the truck up. Or I can just stay in the truck overnight, you know, like sleep on the bed in here. Then I can just roll out of bed and go to work and I don't waste all this time or whatever. I don't know. It's just, I don't know, man. Like I've just lived a different lifestyle from most people. Like I feel like bachelors in general can understand that type of life where you don't really care about, you know, so many things that other people do. But I don't know, like there's a point where like taking care of yourself actually has some value. And I think truck drivers, like if you're a bachelor and a truck driver, it's really easy to get into that lifestyle where you stop caring about the small things and you stop caring about like any form of comfort or any form of luxury or any form of pleasure or whatever. Like it's all just like, it's just like 100% grind, you know, like hopefully not literally in the gearbox, but just like, I mean, it's just like, go, 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 go. You sort of become a machine and you become a tool of efficiency and you just kind of, it's just easy to become less human. That's kind of what I've realized at least. And I don't think it has to be that way. I think you can resist it, but it's very easy to get into that. It's very easy to get into that rhythm, especially if you're these guys who are out for like 6 weeks, I'd imagine. Cause I usually, you know, I'm usually only gone a week or 10 days or 2 weeks at a time. But guys who are out there for 6 weeks, just nothing but roll out of bed and drive, go to bed, roll out of bed and drive. Like, it seems like it's easy to lose your humanity with that if you don't have the culture of the truck driving, which is like, as we said earlier, disappearing as everything becomes more and more mechanical and less artistic. It just, I don't know. It just seems like it's easy to become a cog in the machine.
I did that after my divorce, my second divorce, I did that. I just bolted and I would leave and I'd be gone for 3 months at a time, just living in my truck for like 3 months. And I'd save up a bunch of money and I'd come home for a week and, I'd come to my parents' house because I didn't actually have a place to live. I just came in. My parents had, you know, the house I'm living in now, I bought for my parents. It's a 5-bedroom house and, you know, it was just them two and their cats. So I would just come home and I would grab a bed and I would go to sleep and I would sleep for 12 hours and I'd get up and I'd drive the 2.5 hours to Houston. And I'd pick up my kids and I'd go spend a weekend just spending money. You know, I drop $3,000-$4,000 in a weekend on my kids. All right, the bank account's down to $1,000. I got to go back to work, you know, and I'd jump back in the truck and I'd be gone for another 3 months. And I would do that. And I would do that over and over and over and over through a routine. And it was good for me at the time because I needed that catharsis. I needed that time. I needed that kind of healing process that I was going through because I'd been through a really bad marriage and it was just, it really was a healing process for me to be gone like that. And in the meantime, during that period, I met my current wife, on Facebook. She was still living in South Africa at the time. So we met and we just started talking. We talked for years, you know, like 400 or 500 emails every day back and forth. Just, oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, it was just crazy. And then there were, you know, there were days where we'd spend 12 hours on Skype. We would sleep with Skype on so we could wake up the next morning and see each other, you know, like stuff like that. And after a couple of years of that, then she came here and visited and I went there and visited. And it was when she moved back here, I was actually working local, but I wasn't doing really well. I was working for a company that was paying me like $25 an hour, but they were barely working me like 36 hours a week. So I wasn't doing real well financially, but I didn't really need it much because I was renting a room from a buddy of mine. I was just renting his upstairs for like, I don't know, it was like $300 a month or something like that. And so I was just kind of like chilling. Like I really just wasn't concerned. And I don't think I've ever been materialistic. So it's never really been my thing. I spend most of my money on books and stuff I can do outside, like whether it's, you know, chickens and chicken coops and, you know, stuff like that. That's where I really enjoy, you know, spending my time. Mm-hmm. And so after she came here, we got married. I went back over the road so we could buy this house, just to make it easier on us to buy this house. And our plan was for me to only be back over the road for like 2 more years. And then I was going to come home local. And I ended up driving over the road for 6 years while she was here. And can't tell you how many times she told me I didn't move to America to be alone, you know. So it wasn't like it was an easy process for us. But, you know, now this year I've gotten to where I work local and I'll never go back. I never go back to over the road. You know, I just won't do it again. It got to the point. I was never lonely when I was over the road until after I got married to her. And that's whenever I got my dog to ride with me because I was like, I need something. Mm-hmm. And like you say, you kind of turn into this machine to where you're not thinking about yourself. And so I wasn't exercising. I wasn't doing nothing. I was waking up, go grab my coffee, jump in the truck, you know, like do my pre-trip and roll. Right. At least when I had a dog with me, I had a reason to go exercise. I had to go walk. I had to play with him. You know, I had to spend, you know, time out of the truck. And that was good for me because just spending all that time alone in the truck, just staring at a windshield or staring at the top of your bunk or whatever, like that's horrible. You don't realize how much it eats away at you, but it does eat away at you.
Yeah. I mean, technology has made it easier. Like doing these podcasts is most of my social interaction the last year and a half. Yeah. And then you can talk on the phone with a headset pretty easily, pretty much anywhere in the country. Although all those great canyons and mountains in Utah, they do come at a cell phone service price, but the price is well worth it. You better believe me.
Oh, yeah.
There's some great canyons and, mountains, but yeah, that makes it more bearable. But you're right, like I mean, just being able to see someone and give them a hug, or you know, just being in the vicinity of somebody that you know and talk to them, it means a lot more now. Like it really has. I guess I didn't realize the value of it before I started truck driving, but now when I see a friend or someone comes through town and they stop over, like just that human connection is so much more valuable than I ever used to realize, you know, like once you're alone all the time, you realize how much that physical connection really matters, I guess.
Yeah, no, you actually do. And like I said, when it came to me being gone, the amount of time I was gone, I needed it. Like, it wasn't like I wasn't torturing myself. I really needed that. I needed to be away. Like things had gotten so bad in my life that I was at a point where I was like, I hate everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with anybody. I hate everybody. I just leave me the fuck alone and let me be me and let me, and I'll, you know, I was never planning on getting married again. I wasn't planning on being in another relationship. I was just going to live in a truck for the rest of my life. That was kind of my plan at that point. Cause I was just like, I just couldn't stand it anymore. But, Once I made those connections and once I started making those connections again with better people, more valuable people, but I think I had to learn to value myself before I could get there, you know, and that was part of that process of being gone all the time was learning to value myself and learning to get back in touch with who I am and not just be such and such as husband, you know, and, or, you know, one half of a fucking shit show of a marriage. Like, it's like I had to be me for a while and really get back in touch with who I am. And I did. I drove, like, I would drive every day, you know, 10 hours a day, 11 hours a day. I would be driving in silence for months. And I just did that for months, just reflecting and thinking and working through all these things in my own mind. So it was good for me. It put me in a position where I was able to get back to a place where I could form relationships again. But I mean, not everybody has that out. Not everybody has that opportunity. So I think, I mean, I'm thankful for it, you know, even though I've never been attached to truck driving to the extent to where I identified myself as a driver. It was just what I did. It's just like, you know, nothing bothered me more for like the first couple of years that I drove a truck than when people just called you driver. You're like, I have a fucking name, dude. You know, like, you know, or you're identified by your truck number. Like, that's, yeah. I mean, I was in the military. Like, I'm not a number anymore, you know, like, whatever.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, are they rerouting stuff through the Panama Canal? Is that actually happening? Do you know, or is that still all talk that just DeSantis is willing to do it? Do you know if any of that's actually taken place yet?
I don't know. I don't know if that, you know, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to the supply chains as much as I probably should. A lot of people like to ask me about the supply chains. I'm like, I don't know. You talk to Ross. I'm not the one to talk to, but I don't know if they're doing that yet or not, or if they're going to do that, or if it's just a threat. If DeSantis is just, you know, trying to have some, you know, find some leverage, which, I mean, it could work. He seems like, I don't know a whole lot about DeSantis other than like the good stuff that you hear about, you know, like I watched a video of him earlier talking about like the whole OSHA mandates and all that stuff earlier. And I was like, man, you know, he's pretty much right, you know, there. So but I'm sure there's plenty of things I disagree with him on. But as far as the type of governor he is compared to all the other governors, he's pretty good, you know, like, comparably, probably one of the best governors out there at the moment.
Yeah.
And so even if they're not using the Panama Canal, I can only imagine that he's utilizing every bit of leverage he has to try to curb the tyranny and the authoritarianism that's happening around us.
Yeah. When I first heard that they were going to reroute, you know, stuff. So for those who don't know why, it's because everything's so backed up in California right now. So the idea was, hey, ship it around to Florida or Texas or whatever. My first thought was they'd have to repeal the Jones Act to do that. Do you know much about the Jones Act?
It sounds familiar, but I can't say that I know any details about it.
I think this year it's 101 years old. And from my best understanding, what it is it's this protectionist policy we put in place that only Jones Act approved ships, which are like American Union crewed ships, can port twice consecutively in the United States. So if you're a foreign vessel that is not Jones Act approved, you can't come port in California and then port up in Oregon and then again in Washington. You would have to port in another country before you could port again in the United States. And it's the dumbest fucking thing ever. But the idea behind it is to discourage international competition. You know, the idea is like, oh, only these Jones Act approved ships will be able to go from port to port to port easily. So that's going to discourage foreign ships from taking over our shipping industry. But instead, like most protectionist policies do, it just decimated our shipping industry. And I think, man, I'm forgetting what the number is, but I think there's like, I think out of like 30,000, man, I really shouldn't say these figures because it's been so long since I've said it. So I'm just going to stay away from the figures, but there are thousands of seaworthy vessels out there. And there's like, I think less than a couple hundred that are Jones Act approved. And so it's had the exact opposite effect. But to ship stuff from California around, unless you're using all Jones Act approved ships, you'd have to repeal the Jones Act, which I think is funny. Like when you see all these emergency situations and they temporarily lift restrictions or repeal regulations temporarily, it's like, why was that regulation there in the first place if we can get away with not having it?
Yeah, if it's not needed when it's an emergency, why do you need it when it's not an emergency? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw
suddenly it's safe for me to drive 18 hours a day because, oh my God, they don't have toilet paper in the Northeast. You know?
Yeah, but were you surprised? Well, I mean, you used to haul for Prime moving paper products, right?
Yeah, GE. Yeah.
Yeah. So
not GE. What was it? Oh shit. I done forgot the name of the company. GP.
Okay.
Georgia Pacific.
Were you surprised that toilet paper became the thing? Like, I mean, if you had asked me in 2019, like everyone's gonna be locking themselves in their own houses and you know, there's gonna be shortages and people are gonna be going nuts. What do you think people are going to hoard? Toilet paper would not have been in the top 50 for me, probably. But since you are a man who's been collecting toilet paper for years, do you think differently about that? Or
I haven't bought toilet paper in fucking like 5 years.
You got away with that. Like,
I just found a box of it the other day. I was like, holy shit, man. I still got like 180 rolls sitting right here.
Yeah. Tell my viewers why you had so much toilet paper first off.
Yeah. No, like what would happen is I would get to a job site to make a drop and they'd be unloading the truck. And a box would be, you know, bent or torn or broken. They're like, nah, we're not taking this one. The product's damaged. And I'm like, it's fucking toilet paper. You got maybe two rolls that are, you know, maybe crushed or something like that. And so I would call it in to work and be like, hey, they want to get rid of this. And sometimes there were certain products like when that were damaged or something like that. When we were delivering, they would have us like bring them to Goodwill and donate them or something like that. But toilet paper wasn't one of those. It neither were paper towels. So I would end up like coming home with like a case of like 300 rolls of toilet paper. And so I have a closet. It's just stacked full of toilet paper rolls, you know, and these are the individual rolls that you see at like at restaurants and stuff like that. And so it's double ply. I mean, it's not like it hurts my ass or anything. So it's like, all right. So I haven't bought toilet paper in like 5 years, man. It's so fucking funny. And like I said, I was cleaning my office out the other day and I'm going through and I'm like, what the hell is this box in this closet? And I open the box and it's just like a fucking box of toilet paper. And I'm like, okay, got more toilet paper, huh? Thought maybe I'd have to buy some this year, but I guess not.
So did you foresee it being this massive scramble for toilet paper, or were you surprised by that at all, or were you kind of like, yeah, that figures? Or
what? No, I was totally taken aback. It just made me laugh. I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, why are people freaking out over toilet paper? Like, trucks are moving toilet paper daily. Like, why are you freaking out? Like, there's, and I went on, actually, I was on Scott Horton's show at this time when all this was happening. And I was just like, you people need to relax. There's going to be toilet paper at your store. I promise. Like, you need to quit buying like 5,000 rolls at a time. I mean, I guess people were just so terrified of not being able to wipe their ass, you know, that they were just like, we got to do something. We got to buy some. I was like, man, buy water. You know, like, why are you buying toilet paper?
Yeah, that toilet paper shortage was 100% fear manufactured, because there was no reason. Because like you said, those trucks were moving. They were getting the toilet paper stocked. It was just because I remember going into the grocery store in March of 2020 and this guy just had like 60 rolls of toilet paper in his cart. And I was with my cousin. I was in Tucson, Arizona. And I was just like, boy, the plumbers are going to be super busy with all the fucking like paper towels and grocery bags and random shit that people are going to be flushing down the toilet because they can't get toilet paper. It must have been a good, like, maybe that was all just a scheme by Big Plumbing, you know, to get it.
I don't know, man. It caught me off guard because it was just like, it was just suddenly it was in the news. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on with toilet paper? Like, why are people freaking out about toilet paper? And I remember going to the little grocery store up the road that we do our shopping at. And I walk in there and they have a sign up that says no more than 2 packages of toilet paper at a time. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Okay.
Yeah, like, you know, the hand sanitizer made sense. The toilet paper was just like,
yeah, it was pretty, right. It was pretty out there. I was, I did not understand it, but I did find it funny. And, you know, people are funny though. It's, you would have thought it would have been something that, you know, like NyQuil or something like that, you know, but no, toilet paper,
something disease related, not
right. You know, yeah, exactly.
Related. Yeah. Like they do realize it's not, you know, it's not cholera going around. It's fucking coronavirus. Like you don't need tons and tons of toilet paper. Or yeah, cholera, you shit your brains out too, right? You throw.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, but it was, you know, this is an upper respiratory disease, not something where you're going to have a ton of bowel movements. So,
but even then, even with cholera, I think Pedialyte would probably be the number one seller, you know. Yeah. You gotta stay hydrated.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that the 2020 shortages that were going on in the beginning there, they just signified to me that decentralization is badly needed in this country because you have all these supply chain issues because things have to go through so many channels. Like, you know, you have packing facilities and then you have like farms where some of the food comes from. And then you've got distribution centers and then you've got grocery stores. And you've just got like so many different levels that everything is going through. If one area gets fucked up, the whole supply line gets fucked up. Where if you're someone growing your own food, or even if you're in a small town where you have a farmer's market or, you know, some sort of local place where you can buy your groceries, I mean, those types of communities are going to do better. But when you have these massive fuck ups in our systems, like the cities and places where people are not self-sufficient, they're going to be screwed. But what's so funny to me is listening to so many of these, even like conservatives too, but like conservatives and progressives, they were saying we need to like nationalize the supply chain. Like the government needs to do something to straighten this out. And I was just like so confused by that. It's like, how can you look at this and come away with that conclusion? Like it's so obvious that this is fucked up because how top down and centralized everything is run. Right. Like, how can you not realize the problem is that we've come to rely on these systems too much? We need to go back to kind of producing stuff on our own.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty dumbfounding on my part too. And that's whenever I really started getting really involved with the land as much as I could, you know, being over the road. And I would only be home for about a day and a half every week. So I would come home and I would do everything I could at the house to make sure, you know, that everything was situated, you know. I'm kind of in a fortunate position because the property I bought, though it's majority swamp, and, you know, I mean, I live down in Southeast Texas, so it's just wet here all the fucking time. And, but I have a stocked pond. And so really it was just like, if I get chickens and I can have eggs, then worst come to worst, I always have fish and eggs. Mm-hmm. I might get tired of eating it, but you know, whatever. And I have forest behind me that I can go hunting in and squirrels all over the place. And I'm a coon ass, so I've eaten squirrel plenty of times. There's squirrel and dumplings, there's nothing wrong with it. You know, like I can make a squirrel gumbo, you know, like there's all kinds of stuff I know how to do, you know, just because of my background. And not saying I'm the ultimate, you know, outdoorsman, but I do, I could survive. I know enough by from going and hunting as a child and then being in the military, like I can survive. Like there's nothing you can do to put me in a position where I'm not going to figure out how to survive. Mm-hmm. I can do that. So I felt bad for the people in the cities that had never even examined their potential for providing for themselves. They always thought these supply chains were going to work the way they always worked.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just like this comment here. Toilet paper king in Texas knows how to fish and hunt. He's absolutely going to survive this collapse. Squirrel gumbo, military, sweet. You're all set, man.
I'm good, man. I'll eat a goddamn possum if I have to.
So this is a good place to transition. We were talking before the stream. You think this might be your last year for truck driving and that mm-hmm. you can be self-sustaining without it. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. One of the things that we've done over the last couple of years is we got my wife independent. And a lot of that had to do with the work environment in the United States compared to the work environment in South Africa, right? In South Africa, everything is kind of communal, right? So when you work in an office, you're not sitting in a cubicle. You're not sitting at a desk independent. You're sitting at a table with people all around you. And so you're having conversations. You have these interactions all day long. Whereas in the United States, there's a separation anxiety that you get. And I don't think I ever recognized it because I'd never, you know, worked in another country. So mm-hmm. one of the things that drove my wife crazy was the seclusion of being in a cubicle, and it was really causing her a lot of anxiety. So we just fired it up, man. And I found a way to get her home and where she could work from the house and wouldn't be stuffed up in a cubicle all day long. And she's gotten a couple of good clients. And so we were looking at these mandates coming down and the way that the vaccines are being rolled out and the way that the mask mandates are being rolled out and the testing regimen. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. And it's going to be required. It's only a matter of time before that medical card we got to get every 2 years is going to have that box for an mRNA vaccine. And I assume, I'm just assuming it's going to happen next year. That's just my personal feeling on it. So what we started looking at was expanding the amount of her clientele so that I could just come home and work with her. And, you know, I make a little bit of money from my podcast and then I can write, you know, for the Institute, or I have connections with the 10th Amendment Center. I could write for them if I needed to and make a little bit of, you know, money freelancing that way. But ultimately it's how are we going to secure what it is we do? So, you know, what I'm looking at is here in the next year, I'll probably be mowing lawns and working with my wife as a extension of her virtual assistant business and writing, you know, and doing all these different things full time, you know, part-time to create a full-time income and a full-time lifestyle, which I'm fine with. I mean, a little diversification isn't going to hurt me at this point in time in my life. I've driven for a long time. I've had a lot of experiences, and if they want to destroy the industry by, you know, forcing out all the old truck drivers, you know, through these mandates, then I'm like, whatever. I was never attached to this, to the industry. So it's just whatever. It's all, like I said, it was always just a way for me to make a living. So it was never what I wanted to do or what I had to do. And so I'm very aware that it's potentially coming down the pike that they're going to force this upon us. And I'm just not willing to, you know, comply with them at all.
Yeah. I think I'm on the same page with you there, as far as not being willing. Like, I was actually texting with you. There are certain like situations down the road where I could see myself getting a vaccine. Like, if this keeps mutating into something worse every year, and then they do come out with a vaccine that's proven to actually be effective in stopping the spread or something. So I'm not like anti-COVID vaccine. I'm just not going to be bullied into getting it or coerced into getting it or fear-mongered into getting it. Like, I will quit my job over that. But I think that they have pushed this so hard, and they've been so openly tyrannical about it, that people are actually sick of it and they're pushing back. Like, we saw what happened in Virginia and New Jersey. I mean, a fellow truck driver won his campaign for $153 against an establishment entrenched Democrat who'd been in there for a decade. You know, that was pretty amazing. I think we're going to see more of that stuff coming down the pipe. Like, I think people here in Utah, like, people were really vociferously against the idea of vaccine mandates. And there were even people there who had been vaccinated who were like, no, fuck you. Like, you can't force people to get this. I'm not going to force my employees to get this. So I think if the government had been smarter about it and they'd moved the ball more slowly, boiled the frog more slowly, they might have gotten away with it. But I think because they were so stupid and quick and authoritarian with it, that it might actually blow up in their faces. So, I mean, maybe that's a little bit of hope, because I don't want to quit driving either. And I just got my medical card renewed last month, so I'm good for 2 years. But
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I don't think it's inevitable that this is going to become the thing. I think that, you know, even, I mean, we were talking Jimmy Dore and Bill Maher are way against this. Like, and by the way, actually, like, Bill Maher has been against it longer than Jimmy Dore. It's kind of funny. Like, I think a lot of people would think it backward, but I remember last year, Bill Maher from the beginning was kind of like, we can't hide from a virus. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, you know, we've got to become immune to it. That's how every other virus has been dealt with. You don't hide from it forever. But anyway, like, if you even have like Jimmy Dore and Bill Maher coming out against it, and, you know, a lot of my friends and family are starting to realize, like, yeah, this is stupid. You know, I've got family members who got vaccinated, still got sick. You know, I've got friends who know people who were vaccinated, still got sick. And I don't know, like, I mean, it's becoming very obvious that this should be an individual decision. You know, like, you should weigh your own risks. You should figure, is this vaccine actually right for me in the situation I'm in? And I think people are coming around to that. So I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily think all hope is lost on that front.
I think it really depends on the majority of people becoming vocal about it and standing up. See, like, the thing with this OSHA mandate, let's take that for instance. From what I can gather, and they even exempted truck drivers at this point in time, because 30% of truckers were like, no, we're not doing it. So you're just going to be without us, which there's some other issues with trucking right now too. We can get into if you want to, especially when it comes to getting tires for trucks, which is going to cause a big problem. But the deal is, if you had enough blue collar workers, if you had enough productive citizens, not hedge fund managers and, you know, scientists, you know, just sit in a lab coat all day, but people that are growing food and doing the working in the as the backbone of society. You know, I have a saying that they can't stand you, but they can't live without you. And I say they can't survive without you. That's how it goes. They can't stand you, but they can't survive without you. And if those people that they can't survive without were to all stand up and just say, no, I'm not doing it, like, whatever, and stores started shutting and people couldn't get basic things, then they would change their tune really fast. Unfortunately, I don't think the American people have a spine anymore. And I look around the world, and the majority of the world is just going along. My wife's mom lives in England. Her sister lives in New Zealand. They're just all going along. Well, if they tell me I have to, you know, get a vaccine, then I'm going to get a vaccine. And if I don't have my period for the next 3 months because of the side effects of those vaccine, well, that's good because I didn't like my period anyway. But yeah, okay. So what are the health risks, though? Like, what is this doing to your body? Like, what are you doing to yourself? You know, so it's just it's just this kind of like, I texted Scott the other day and I just said, please tell me you have a show coming up about why the plants crave Brondo, because I just don't understand this anymore. You know?
So. So let me ask you this. A lot of people have been pushing for a trucker strike, and I actually don't think that's a good idea. And this might be unpopular, but this is why I'm against sanctions on other countries, because I don't think sanctions hurt the regime. I don't think they hurt the government. I think they just hurt the citizens of that country. They just hurt the people. If we all truckers just stopped moving for 3 weeks or whatever they want us to, I don't see any outcome other than a lot of people dying. Like, I think I agree with you that people need to stand up, but I don't think shutting down the supply chain is standing up necessarily. I think, like, you need people in all sorts of different professions just saying, no, we're not going to do this. But I think if truckers just stop delivering goods, the only thing that's going to happen is a lot of people in the cities are going to die. And I don't think that would, I think that would actually maybe weaponize the government to say, okay, we need to nationalize the supply chain and take over even more control. Because see what these private businesses did to you? They fucked you over. And if we have complete control over this, this won't happen anymore. But I really don't see the difference between sanctioning a country and trying to shut down our own supply chain. Like, I don't, it's not going to hurt anyone in Washington in the government. It's just going to hurt, you know, regular people in Salt Lake City or Houston or Miami or whatever. But what do you think?
I think that if you want to see it done successfully, just stop delivering to DC. Don't stop delivering anywhere else. Just stop going into DC. If your route sends you to DC, just say, no, I'm not going to DC.
And then just tell the people in DC to get out if you're,
or just stop delivering to the richest areas. Mm-hmm. You know, they just say, no, I didn't feel safe. Everybody there is vaccinated. I might catch something. you don't have to like shut down the entire supply chain. You just have to shut it down to specific locations. If Wall Street and all the lobbyists and, you know, defense agencies around DC are getting starved out, then they're going to change their tune really fast. Those are the people you have to affect. You don't have to affect the average people. You affect the people with the money, the people with the wealth, power, and influence. That's who you want to affect, right? Mm-hmm. So just stop delivering to their locations. Don't go there. Don't go into the Galleria in Houston. Don't go in, over to Manhattan. You know, keep delivering to Queens. Keep delivering to the Bronx. Keep delivering to Brooklyn. Force the rich people to go into the poor neighborhoods and interact with actual people.
There you go. I like that. Yeah. Makes sense to me, man. I just think, you know, a lot of people want to see something happen and they haven't thought about the repercussions of like anything that you do. Because I mean, I just think I think you're right. Like it would have to be targeted. Mm. Speaking of like not delivering to places, I don't, you know, California, they're just, it's like they want us to stop patronizing them.
I'm surprised they still let trucks into that state.
Dude, like, I mean, just on a personal level, like, you know, they're the tech capital of the world. And every other state out here, if we need a permit, you know, we can digitally request it and they'll send it to us digitally, usually within a couple hours. Mm. California, you still have to handwrite the permits, fax them in, and then they take a few days and they fax them back to you. So all my California permits, my boss will email them to me and they're pictures of handwritten out permits. It's just retarded. Yeah. But they've also got this new law that really fucks owner operators. And then they're trying to phase out all diesel trucks. And my question is like, you know, I know it's going to hurt short term, but maybe we should reroute everything through, you know, even through the Panama Canal, but also like to Oregon or Washington, because Oregon and Washington suck too, but they're nowhere near as bad as California. Like, I mean, at what point do we finally give them the middle finger and say, fine, if you don't want us to do business with you, we won't. You know, like, I
mean, like just drop the shit off in Vegas and let Teslas haul it into the cities. I don't fucking care.
I would love to see that. Like a D10, a Tesla hauling a D10 into, that would be amazing.
Yeah, like, I don't know what to do about these people. Like, I saw that. I don't know if you were still on Twitter whenever it was going around, but there was this fucking woman who, I don't know what she was doing. She's just randomly going and standing in front of trucks and saying, oh my God, can you believe how ridiculous it is? Somebody needs a truck that's as tall as I am. I'm 5'5". I'm like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was like, and she's like staring into the grill, F-250. And it's like, oh Jesus. Like, do you have nothing else to do but complain? Like, that's your entire life. You're so miserable in your own life. All you can do is say, I don't like what this person is driving. Like, go fuck yourself, man. I hate these people, man. Like, I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, I haul a lot of excavators in and out of California. I think maybe I should just start dropping them on the border and then, you know, or right along like the San Andreas Fault. And then maybe we ought to just plant a bunch of dynamite and then like say, okay, 1, 2, 3, boom, push. And then just kind of like, you know, just
this push like,
off into the ocean, let it go.
Just build a bunch of fucking windmills, you know, at the border of Nevada and California. And just crank on the engines and have them blow this shit into the fucking state. Like, whatever. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, it sucks because California, geographically, California is probably my favorite state just because there's so much in it. I mean, it's got forests, mountains, lakes, ocean, deserts, you know, I mean, they got it all. But fuck, like, talk about, I mean, they ruined that pristine promised land. Like a lot of the natural disasters going on. I mean, the earthquakes, whatever, that's not their fault. But the fires and the mudslides, a lot of that is from the way that they've treated the forests over the years. Because the mudslides happen because everything is burned, so there's no roots holding anything in anymore. But a lot of those fires, like, you need to let that shit naturally cycle. You need to let a fire happen occasionally. And for, like, 150 years they didn't let any fires happen in California, and the undergrowth just got out of control. And so now when a fire does happen, it'll fucking burn the dirt on the surface of the ground and make it impossible for anything to grow in it for like 1,000 years. It's just, yeah. Like, ah, man, dude, just, I mean,
yeah, so I mean, yeah, they made fun of Trump, you know, whenever he was like, well, if they would be implementing control burns in the state, it would fix a lot of their problems. But he was right.
Yeah.
You know, he was getting
it in his own retarded way. So no one listens to him. He was right. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember the words he used, but I knew what he was saying. I was like, okay, the guy's got a point. Like, so, but yeah, you know, one of the things though, like, I want to get onto this because I think this is an interesting subject, is the rubber shortage. This is like, this is a big deal. I was just at a tire shop a couple of weeks ago, and for an actual tractor trailer, not for this millwork truck that I was spent all day fucking with today. But for an extra tractable trailer. The guy's telling me, he's like, some of these tires, like, he's like, you need four tires on your truck. One of them's going to be from Taiwan. One of them's going to be from Japan. One of them's going to be from China. And then we got to wait a couple of days to see where the other one comes from, because there's such a fucking back order on tires. So I was like, you want to shut down, like, the truckers aren't going to have to shut anything down. They're going to be forced off the road because they can't get damn tires. You know, I mean, how many times a day do you see a fucking gator on the road? Like, they're all over the fucking place. Like, there's blowouts every day, you know? So it's just one of those things. This is a big deal that nobody's talking about, is this rubber shortage and the issue with tires. I just bought three tires for my wife's truck because her spare had never been used. So I had a brand new tire that I just switched out one of the old tires as the spare, put the spare on as a permanent. But I bought three new ones. It cost me over $400 for a fucking tires for a Nissan Frontier. Three tires for a Nissan Frontier, over $400. Like, that was like 5 years ago. That was $200 at most, you know? So this rubber shortage is going to be a big deal moving forward, and nobody's talking about it.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even really know anything about it. So do we not have like any tire manufacturing here in the United States? Is it all foreign pretty much? Or
it seems like it, man. Like, just talking to these guys, like I said, they're telling me they have back orders for like 2 weeks on tires.
Wow.
And it's like, man, I mean, the company I work for, we have a contract with them, so we don't have to wait that long. But for owner operators coming through and stuff like that, people that don't have these contracts with this tire company, that they don't have a choice. They're sitting there waiting for tires to come in. And it's just, man, it's, you want to talk about shutting down the trucking industry. That's the number one way it's going to get shut down. And, you know, my buddy Coop that I have on my show, pretty regularly, probably once a month, he comes on, and, he warned me about this like 8 months ago, and we're just starting to see the effects of it. And I'm like, man, yeah, this is going to be bad.
Wow. Buy your tires now, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was you sent me a text from one of your buddies about a diesel shortage out west. I didn't notice it anywhere I went. Do you know anything beyond what he sent you, or is that all you heard?
No, I don't know. They were just tagging all the truckers they could think of and just like, hey, like, if you're heading out west, be careful, you know, because there's a diesel shortage. And I was like, all right. Fortunately, I don't do that anymore, so like, I ain't gonna worry about it. But I immediately thought of you, because I was like, that's where Reed spends all his time out there. So
yeah, no, I'll keep you guys updated on that if I actually run into anything, but so far I haven't seen anything. Last thing I wanted to ask you, this is completely off topic, but I just came upon this today, and I guess I'm a couple days late to this story, but is just fucking hilarious. But I log into Facebook. This has nothing to do with what we've been talking about, by the way, but it's just funny. I log into Facebook and someone has posted a YouTube link that says Marilyn Manson responds to rumors he's a Christian. And I was like, oh boy, I've got to click on this. What the fuck is this? And then some of the first words in the narration are, Marilyn Manson leads prayer circle with Kanye West and Justin Bieber.
I saw that. I don't know what the fuck was going on there. I meant to look into it and I never looked into it, but I did see that. They're all dressed in like solid white. And yeah. It was just like kind of this weird looking like visual that you're staring at it and you're like, the fuck is happening here? It's like,
but I mean, there have been some banger headlines in 2021. But Marilyn Manson leads prayer circle with Kanye West and Justin Bieber. I think that takes the cake. Like, that's just, there's so much right there. Oh, man. But anyway, man, where can people find you, keep up with you? You've got a great podcast. I listen to it occasionally. I think I got a link to your Twitter and your Substack, man, but just give us the list of where people can keep up with you.
Yeah, man. The best way to find my podcast, if you want to listen to me yap with a bunch of people, is libertarianinstitute.org/year-0. Or you can find me on Twitter at TD Salmons. I don't know what the link for my Substack is. I don't share a lot of these. Like, I don't share my Patreon. I don't, like, whatever. If you want to find it, it's in my show notes probably. So I just copy and paste everything. I'm just like, whatever. I'm lazy. I got too much other shit to do. So, but yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on. And we're going to get together on my show hopefully next week if we can work out our schedules.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure you guys go check him out and I'll be on his show. And I'll be on Austin Peterson's radio show tomorrow morning for 10 minutes talking about this trucker shortage stuff. So I don't even know where his radio broadcasts to, but if you're in Missouri near where he is, then I'll be on there. They're saying the link is messed up to your podcast, but I'll fix that. So if you're watching this after the live, I'll have the link fixed so you can find the Year Zero podcast. But yeah, anytime you want to come on and talk, Tommy, I always like talking with you. So this was another good conversation, and look forward to the next.
Yes, absolutely, man.